Hey, thank you again for pressing play, and welcome once again to another edition of the Suns Jam Session Podcast, the original post-game podcast on Planet Orange, shooting the shit about the Phoenix Suns since 2019. How was that game one of the NBA Finals? Did you enjoy that? Nice little ass-whooping by the Boston Celtics over the Dallas Mavericks. Matthew, I gotta say, it kind of felt like the 2022 Phoenix Suns Game 7 Suns showed up. Although the Mavericks had a little bit more of a fight, but at what point did you turn the game off?
Yeah, we're just talking about 5 minutes left. I actually fell asleep during the game, so I'll admit that
those
too.
Games.
And hopefully we can make up for it, Jamsters, on this pod. A little bit more exciting.
Hopefully we're a little bit more entertaining than that game was. Disappointing. Kind of par for the course as the playoffs goes, though. There's been a lot of very lopsided games. It's really, on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't think it's been an entertaining postseason. But you know what? I'm going to save that question for our guest. John Bloom will be joining us momentarily. Until then, reminder, subscribe, rate, review, thumbs up, all that stuff. Help the analytics, help the algorithms, help the AI. I don't know how any of it works, but if you do it, somehow it helps us. So do it.
Please.
Thank you. All right. Well, I've got a Moscow Mule ready to go, Matthew. I'm still pounding these Moscow Mules because it's summertime and it's 113. Bradley's on the microphone with Ross MG. All the people. That's right, ladies and jamsters, join us right now on the Suns Jam Session Podcast. I think making his jamster debut. We've been in the same circles, but never specifically here on the Suns Jam Session. Welcome to John Bloom, the radio voice of the Phoenix Suns. How you doing, Bloomer?
I'm doing well. It is good to make my debut. I think we've podcasted before in like one of those big mashup, super jam session, whatever we called it back in the day. After a game late night, I might have had a few cocktails in me that night. Tonight, stone cold sober. I'm rocking some ice water, but I did have a mule last night. So I'm with you on the selection, John. I think you have a wise choice there.
Now, are you just a classic mule guy, or do you do any of the variations? Because there's bourbon carrot mules and Fagenza fig vodka. I mean, there's a gazillion things you can do with a mule. It's what makes it delicious and versatile.
I think it is very delicious, very versatile, and I am not a mulist. I will take any different type of mule. You can throw a Kentucky mule at me.
Yes.
I know that there's a group of people that don't want to call it the Moscow mule anymore, obviously. So you get the sensitivities there. So you might just rock a Tito's mule once in a while. I'll just go in and then you make it specific to the vodka that you like, right? Obviously, if you want to go that route. The one thing I will say is I haven't done a lot of either tequila or gin mules. Have you ever tried either of those?
Gin, yes. Tequila, no. I'm just not a
tequila for me.
Person. But gin, I love. I'm a huge fan of gin. Very old school kind of spirit. Very 50s. You know, I feel like I should be hanging out with Mad Men, although they were drinking whiskey back then. You know, but I like a Costco mule because that's what it is. I have the Kirkland vodka. That's what I like to use, you know? It's delicious.
Well played.
Nice and cheap.
You get the Sam's Club stuff, right?
Me?
Matthew? Yeah, you're the Sam's Club guy.
I'm definitely not a drinker. I was going to say, I learned my lesson with gin. I used to take shots of it, and that lasted maybe 2 hours, and I was... Never mind. We won't go there.
Yeah, that's
another
why...
Another pod.
You don't take shots of gin.
I do remember the Megapod we did with you about 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember texting John, like, is that John Bloom? We're on the same pod with John Bloom? Very exciting day for us. So I just had to bring that up.
That was like my reaction when I looked in the media room and I was like, is that Matthew Lissy in the Al McCoy Media Center? And I went over and I started asking him questions. I was like, wait, you're in here now? You made the big time, my man.
Yeah, very strange. I'm sure for a lot of people, like, what is he doing here?
Where's
I was
his
there
hat?
All year. Very consistent. So.
Where's his hat? What do you think of this playoffs, Bloomer? I mean, it's been, at least in my perception, not very entertaining. A lot of blowouts, some sweeps. We've been waiting a week for basketball, which felt like 3 months. What is your take on all this?
Yeah, that was a long gap, wasn't it? And then, you know, to start it the way it did tonight, where the Celtics really controlled the game from the start. I'm not surprised that that's how it went in game one. I don't think the series is over by any stretch. But, you know, look, I think Boston was the best basketball team all season. And so I always kind of felt like even going into the playoffs, Boston was going to have not an easy time, but probably make their way to number 18. Isn't that just ridiculous? I mean, we just want one. We're going to get 18. They're going to get their 18th Larry O'Brien. That's insane. But that aside, I do think overall it hasn't been a great product from the playoff standpoint. And, you know, I think that's, you know, mostly because it's been missing the Phoenix Suns.
I completely agree with that. And it is kind of funny because I have some Boston Celtics friends in my life, and I'm talking to them, and they're like, you know what, it's after you win a championship, there's a lot of pushback on decisions that are made. I'm like, stop talking about all these great feelings and tough decisions you've had to navigate after winning, you know, back when you won your 17th championship in 08 and how it's been desolate ever since then. We just want one. We just want to feel that once, so we can sit there and have the 20th anniversary team come out and there's John Bloom introducing them, and you're doing, you know, the Tom Leander job or the K-Ray job out there, you know, introducing them at center court, because that would be just an amazing feeling because we've never felt that. Yet here they are with an opportunity to do so. And walking into the Garden, it's intimidating, isn't it? I mean, you've been to the TD Garden. All those banners, because there's not only Celtics banners up there, there's the Bruins banners as well. There's so much laundry up there. Like, who's responsible for laundering all that to make sure it stays clean? And it's all white, so you have to put it in, you know, with the bleach and such.
Yeah, that person or people are on the grind, like, consistently. They got to keep those things without getting the mothballs and all the other things that can get up there in the rafters. Yeah, and it gets cold there, by the way, over the winter. So, yeah, they got an extra duty there. It's an amazing place from a basketball standpoint, obviously, historically. And, you know, if you go way back and they had that dominant run that none of us were alive to see, you know, that accounts for the majority of their titles. In our lifetimes, they've had a few, but it hasn't been that dominant stretch. You know, so, and again, I know I'm significantly older than you guys, so I can get a couple more C's titles in my world. I do want to give them props for the way they started tonight. I thought it was a really healthy tribute to Bill Walton that I enjoyed. And there's a guy that I have just a ton of love, respect, adoration for, even though I didn't see him play much. You know, when he was a player, I was a, you know, 11-year-old when they won in 86. And I remember bits and pieces of that. And Bill Walton was, what, the sixth man, I think, on that squad. But I don't remember him as a player. I remember him as the kooky announcer that we all remember. Some people didn't love his act. I did. I always loved his act. And what's crazy about it is the two guys who ended up broadcasting the most games with him over the last decade are two of my closest friends, Roxy Bernstein and Dave Pasch. Yeah. And just to see them, like, be you know, treated the way that they were by him was part of what I loved tuning in for, because you never knew what he was going to throw at them or say to them or eat next to them or play or whatever he was doing. And I loved that part of what Bill Walton brought to basketball, brought to broadcasting, brought to our world. And I'm going to make it a point to try to bring some of it myself and do it, you know, as a tribute to him, because I think he's kind of made that mark in me. And maybe you've heard some of it at some point, because I will go off the deep end like he does sometimes once in a while.
Yeah, it's the kookiness we love. But I just want to say the ESPN broadcast too with JJ Redick, it can be pretty stale. So I do miss guys like Walton and also like even like a John Madden, how they do get a little kooky and go off the rails, because things can get boring sometimes, like a game like this where it is kind of a blowout. You just want to hear other things, like, you know, it's a good block, you don't need to really expand on that anymore, just have some knowledge, have like Jeff Van Gundy stuff, like some stories from back in the day. Like, that's what I love to hear. So we are kind of missing that right now, I feel like, with the broadcast in the finals.
It's like how tough do you think that is, Bloomer? I mean, they got, at least on the TV side, you know, it's a three-man team. So you got J.J. Redick there. Doris Burke, who's the first female to ever do a professional men's championship, is there. They're both sitting, you know, on the side. So there's three of them. Like, it's you and Kempton on the radio. That's got to be hard enough just dealing with Timmy. What do you think it's like to be part of a three-man team?
Yeah, it's a whole different deal. And yeah, the TV broadcast, and I do like to call it an art form or a craft. I like to use the term art form for what we do, play-by-play broadcasters. TV version, completely different. It's almost like a talk show when you're doing play-by-play on TV, because you don't have to call the action. Now, obviously, we love the bang from Mike Breen and all the different kind of catchphrases that have been developed over the years by the greats. But I think when you're calling a game on television, you can branch out into other types of conversation. Whereas with our art form on the radio, we're painting the picture for people who don't have the images. And I absolutely adore that part of the job. I love the technicality of it. I love coming up with different terms and phrases and ways to turn a phrase while we're doing it. But there's less time for conversation. There's less time for Tim and I to kind of get off the rails and go on a tangent, because we got to describe what's happening for people who can't see it. So that's the main difference of the two different art forms there. And then as far as adding a third person, you know, obviously in TV, you have the time and the grace to do that. But in radio, it's tricky. Some people have tried it to put a three-person booth together on the radio side, but there just usually is not time for that, except for like pre-half and post-game. When you have that extra time to talk, then it makes sense to have that extra voice. I do want to give props to Doris, and I'm glad you mentioned that, John. And props to Adam Silver in the NBA for, again, blazing trails that, and none of the other sports do that. Now, it's one thing for us to say that, because football, obviously, it'd be a lot harder for a woman to get on a broadcast and do the Super Bowl, because we haven't had women play NFL football, right? We haven't had them play at a high level that sport. Women have been playing at a high level in basketball for a long, long time, but that doesn't mean that it's a logical step that they're going to make it to the booth at that level and call an NBA championship. So hats off to Doris. It has not been an easy road for her or the other women that have been paving the trails for women. Like, who knows if one of my daughters decides to get into this business, for crying out loud. But what I'm saying is the next generation, right? And so Doris Burke always going to be that pioneer and deserves a ton of credit for getting there.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, obviously for those of us, you know, you're broadcasting the game, so you don't hear a lot of the discourse that goes on. And good for you. You don't see a lot of the discourse that happens on social media during the games, because everyone's so critical and negative. And it's actually been nice that the season's over, because I'm on Twitter a lot less and around the negativity a lot less. I live like Matthew does, which is the way
off.
To go.
Just delete the app. just totally off of it.
You know,
he's smiling more, isn't he, Matthew?
Yes, exactly. I'm happy. It's a happier life, right?
And it's not just the Costco mule, you know. It's, you know,
it helps though. It helps it just a little help. Bit.
It does help. Well, there is a segment that we like to do here on the Suns Jam Session podcast when we have a guest on, and it's a little game that we call the Wheel World.
This is the true story.
True story
of people answering some questions
that are spun on some random wheel thingy.
Random wheel thingy.
To find out what happens when questions aren't naturally asked.
But come from a wheel.
This is the Suns Jam Session Wheel World.
So essentially what we do here, Bloom, is we got a bunch of questions for you. We spin them on a wheel and see what comes up, and then you answer the questions. It's pretty basic stuff. So
pretty simple.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's my way of doing this. Of instead of trying to naturally bring these up in conversation, I figure I'll just do it this way. Our first question for you: which arena is the most comfortable to cover a game in?
Ooh, most comfortable. I'm going to go with the home gym. I'm going to go with the Footprint Center for me, just because I feel comfortable getting there. I get to roll into the parking lot over the course of the last couple years. So since filling in for the Hall of Famer, they've allowed me to kind of use the valet parking spots down there. So those dudes are awesome. They all hustle, every single one of them that works down there when I pull in. Now, obviously, the funniest part, and I'm going to start, you're taking you behind the scenes here. When I roll down to the arena for the game, you know, I'm solo, but I'm bumping my jams. I got music going loud. I pull into the arena, and there's always fans waiting to see the players coming in, right? And here I come. Who's this clown? And I know there's always somebody that's saying that as I pull in. Like, who the heck is that clown? But the clown makes his way down in, and I get through security, say what's up to all the people down there, and then cruise up to my seat. And, you know, just seeing the people, I think, is what – my favorite part of it is there's always conversation, just getting to work, getting to where I get to call, you know, my little broadcasting location up there, section 102 at the top. If you're going to the Footprint Center to check it out, that's where we're at. And I love the view from up there. I think it's a really good spot too. And we have plenty of space. And then I get the best engineer in the business, Walt Ellis, to work with. And so those are all major factors for why I would say Footprint Center is my answer to question number one right there.
So is that view better than what we get up in like the corner where they put us bright
side
guys?
That's a good view too. Yeah, it's good. In the auxiliary? Yeah, you're in the auxiliary press. Yes. Area. Yeah.
But the situation. Worst part about it, Bloom, is we're right next to a bar and I can't drink.
It's tricky.
I don't want to sit there and get smashed, but like the Suns make you want to have a cocktail or two while you're at the game, you know?
Though occasionally that is the case, yes. But I want to ask you this. Who's your boss?
My boss?
Yeah. In this case, in the realm we're living in now, when you're going to cover a Phoenix Suns basketball game, who is telling you don't have a cocktail?
His wife?
No one. No, the answer is true. We just got our answer. So, yeah, this is true. Yeah, I think you can change it up a little bit.
There because, like, Parker and you know, they're up there. I don't want them to see me smashing cocktails.
Just
like,
take a nap. I'm like, be out by the third quarter.
I'm up there. You know, sometimes Gambo's there. I'm like, hey, what's up, man? Like, you know, he's like, dude, that Voida just is, like, taking naps at halftime because he's so lit.
That's okay. Hey, listen, it'd be good. You got to develop kind of a rep, you know, you get a rep for it and then it becomes kind of a thing. And now you're an influencer, you know, you're kind of an influencer. And Matthew, he's an influencer anyway, isn't he already?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I post burritos.
I'm just trying to build the brand. That's all I'm doing here. I'm trying to help build Voida's brand.
Back in like the 1940s, 50s, isn't they like drinking right? Or was that like as early as the 70s? I don't even know.
He already mentioned Mad Men. Yeah, he already threw Mad Men out there. Yeah. So he knows the deal. You just need a fancy decanter. And when you go to your briefcase or suit, bring a backpack that you bring to the game, because they're going to let you through. Right. This is what we're going to do. We're going to show them this podcast. We're going to say, listen, security staff at Footprint Center, we're building Voida's brand. So allow the decanter, please. And so the decanter will make its way in. And I'm tying this all back into my shout out to Bill Walton, because, again, I think you would completely adore what we're doing here with this conversation.
I don't think Dave King would have, because he was, you know, he used to always say, he's like, make sure you wear a dress shirt and slacks. And by the end of the season, I was wearing a hat and, you know, like a t-shirt. I'm like, it's
first time
media,
I showed
bro.
Up. Yeah, he made me dress up nice, and everyone was just in sweats. And I'm like, but I can't imagine John rolling in with some Kirkland vodka and just a banana in his backpack. That's it. That's all he has.
Yep. It's way too big. That bottle is massive. That bottle is absolutely massive. All right,
it's an enormous vodka bottle.
Let's give the wheel another spin, see what it says. Matthew, why don't you read
this
one off?
Yeah, let me read this one off for you. Your favorite pair of shoes you own is...
That's a good question.
It's almost like picking your favorite kid, though. You know, I mean, it's
easy
to
do.
They can't hear. Yeah, they don't listen, and they won't have hard feelings. So that's the difference. All right, the favorite ones, man. I'm gonna go. I beat them up. I've been looking for a new pair just to replace the old pair, but the price has really shot up. But it's the OG Moss Point Books with the yes, sir, and no, ma'am, or no, sir, and yes, ma'am on the back with that silver. It just all the touches. You don't wear socks in them, you know, like you get chastised by Devin Booker if you're wearing socks in those shoes. I respect it. It probably his entire family and everybody related to Moss Point would, you know, just absolutely house you if they saw you wearing socks in those things. And that's rightfully so, because it even says on the shoe that it's like a sockless shoe. So anyway, I didn't even know that was a thing before I bought those. Those have made their way to my favorite because they're great in the summer. If you don't have to put socks on and they're still comfortable. Yes.
Yeah, those book shoes are unbelievably comfortable. Like no one really talks about that. Like they look nice, they're clean, but they're so darn comfortable. I wear mine every day. Like I got the Mirage version 2, the light blue ones, and I wear them every day. Like I already need another pair probably because I'm going to wear those suckers out because they're so darn comfortable.
No socks though, huh?
No, well, these I'm talking about the Air Force Ones, the original ones, his first release. That's not like part of the chapter ones.
Yes.
But was like, I guess we could call them the prequel.
The prequels.
The prequels.
The book prequels. All right.
There we go. We just named them for them.
This is a quick hitter. Yeah, you're just building brands over there, Bloomer.
I like to do that.
Are avocados overrated?
No. I'm a Californian at heart. Go way back with the avos. My kids love avocado toast. Skipped a generation, but it made it down to theirs. And I think, obviously they can go wrong, but so can every fruit and vegetable. And a wrong avocado is as gross as it gets, isn't it? Yeah. When it's just all disgusting. And you, especially when you're excited and you're cutting into it and you're like, yeah, it's time to dip guacamole. No, it's all gross and I'm not going to get it. And then you're disappointed because you can't necessarily tell by looking at it or sometimes even feeling it. There's my long answer for avocados.
The fact that you call them avos like shows that you're okay with avocados.
I'm on a first name basis with them.
Now you're from Northern California, right?
Northern California. And there was, that's the other thing. Like I have pride in weird things, vegetables, what? Artichokes, like I grew up near a lot of artichokes. And so like, I love artichokes. A lot of people are like, what the hell's an artichoke? I actually really still enjoy artichokes, and so does my whole family now because of me. And then my 15-year-old makes a killer garlic aioli that needs to go in a bottle. We need to start, jarring this stuff and selling it and building that brand.
Love that brand. So artichokes, one, Scottsdale Community College, the fighting artichokes.
That's what they are. I still need a lid with that on it, the fighting artichokes.
Yeah, I don't know if they make them. I don't know if anybody would wear them. Where are you from in Northern California?
San Mateo, California is the city that I grew up in. My parents still live. Went to San Mateo High School. If you know Northern California, it's on the peninsula is what we refer to that area of the Bay Area. It's the peninsula, and it is really close to San Francisco International Airport. So when you land at SFO, not far from there at all.
Nice, nice. Now remember, as I get ready to spin this wheel again, and Matthew will read this one, remember, go Dodgers.
Mm-mm. Never.
Right, oh, it's a lot. Matthew, was your favorite moment of the season gambling a whiskey?
Grabbing.
I thought you were a gambler. Was the season grabbing a whiskey with John and Matthew or hanging with Gavin, Dan, Justin, Paul, and Devin Booker? Be honest.
Ooh.
Which one of those two experiences?
They go toe to toe. They absolutely go toe to toe. There, huh? Yeah. No, they do. Because I remember that night that we hung out right around the corner from the gym, and that was awesome, and we should do more of that.
Yes.
And then the night that we had at Global Ambassador was pretty dope. I mean, not only did we have a group of, wayward souls, as we all – I would put all the people that you mentioned in that group. Shout out to all those guys, by the way. That was a lot of fun, guys and gals. And then Book showed up. And was like pounding on the glass, be like, hey, come on. And I went up and dapped him up. And then he took off in the back room. And Gavin was just so depressed because he had flown all the way from Australia. And all he wanted to do in his life was meet Devin Booker. And Devin Booker was right there.
And he was taking a picture of me and Justin. And like, he turns around and Booker's walking away. And he's like, wow, I missed my moment because I'm taking a picture of these clowns. But then he met him later.
Justin, we love you. It was a great picture. But Gavin was going to absolutely like debone both of you guys because he was that upset. And then I'm paying the bill, I think, and I see Book leaving with his brother. And I turn to my buddy and I'm like, oh, it's too bad Gavin's not here. That was his chance. And then here he comes running through the lobby on a full sprint to get that picture, which we all saw and adored. And it was great. That was an epic night for sure.
That was fun. I remember it was around the holiday season as well. So it was just kind of a little chilly outside, and we were having some nice old fashions to keep us warm. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have a pregame ritual is the next question on the Wheel World. What's your ritual?
Yeah. It's not like all that rigid, I guess. But I mean, like I go on the early bus when I'm on the road. So that bus leaves the hotel 3.5 hours before tip off. Oh, I'm always on that bus no matter what. I just like getting to the gym early and making sure that I'm there just in case anything's happening. We meet the engineer that we have in every city when we get there. So that's always nice. Spend some time with the guy you're going to be working with. And, you know, all the different factors of why I would want to be at work early. So I've got this kind of routine where I'll get the shower done. I'll get everything ready. I'll get the coffee with the little extra rocks on top of it. I basically make a coffee last all day long. I get an iced coffee in the morning. And then I get a bucket of ice and I just milk that thing and I keep that coffee lasting as long as possible until I get on that bus. And I'm putting my hip hop usually on in my beats. I'm getting in the right mode. I'm maybe thinking about some local artists and some people that I might want to, you know, weave into my calls and lyrics wise and that yeah. type of stuff, because I have fun with that. And so those are all kind of my pregame routines. And then once I get to the gym, I take a little snapshot of my setup. You guys have probably seen it when I put it out on Twitter or X, and show people where I'm broadcasting from with my cheat sheet and stuff like that. And get, you know, the one thing is rigid. And, again, taking you behind the scenes here, I don't eat, after my early meal in the day, like a breakfast / lunch. I will not eat anything until after the game.
Are you afraid of farting on the air?
You can't really get up and leave during the broadcast, right? You're so right. Yeah.
Booker for three. you don't want to squeeze any out.
Well, there is a mute button, right?
Unless yeah, you got a cough yeah. button. Yeah, yeah. But okay. You know that it doesn't cover everything. You also just can't. You can't go up and take off. So I just, you know, better safe than sorry, and I've taking tips from other broadcasters along the road too. And I've kind of got a messed up system. I have Crohn's disease, which a lot of your listeners might know about. And so I've been dealing with that for probably 15, 20 years now. I just have this kind of whole routine, but then when the game's over, dudes, I'm so hungry, man. I got to get some food. Like, you know, you'll see me when I'm wrapping up and we say goodbye, good night, everybody, and hand it off to Tim Ring for the post game show. Where's the food? Like, I'm looking for popcorn, whatever I can get. It's not necessarily healthy to eat late night. I know that, but that's my routine on the games.
Wow, no halftime hot dogs, huh?
No.
Oh
no.
Man,
can't do it.
You're missing out.
They look delicious.
They are.
Yeah. Tell me, yeah, does the food taste as good as it looks? Because yes. They have upgraded the press yeah. food.
Yeah, Matt Ishbia has done a great job getting rid of Compass Group and bringing in the new group, and the food is just out freaking standing. So. I'll bring you something next time at the very end of the game. Now I know when to bring
save
you.
There
we go.
Yeah.
Teamwork.
All right, Matthew.
Bigger draft mistake, Jalen Smith or Josh Jackson?
I'm going to go Josh Jackson because Jason Tatum's right there, and look what he's doing. I mean, look, I know Tyrese Halliburton's there for when Sticks was taken. That's the main transgression that is brought up, at least, in that draft. But to me, Jason Tatum, I mean – Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, it's like it couldn't be further apart in the yeah. two careers. And yeah, I mean, look, I hate being negative on guys. Do I have a track record of being a professional athlete? No. So I'm never really bashing guys. That's probably an MO you picked up on during my stretch on Suns broadcast for a decade and a half or so. But when you look at, you know, what was left on the table and what you could have had. Obviously, you could do that for every single draft with the exception of maybe the times that you had the top pick or that you ended up with the best player, which is so rare. So, yeah, I'm just going to look at it and say I'll say that the worst one is Josh because of Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I think
and I'll go that, DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, no, I think we all end up there. Everyone's talking about Nurkic right now. I'm like, dude, it doesn't matter, man. We would have had What's your biggest pet peeve just in life? What's your biggest pet? Like, I hate people who don't use their blinker, right? Like, that drives me up a freaking wall. What's your biggest pet peeve?
Slow play on a golf course.
Ooh, yes.
I can't.
So me?
I can't with it. I can't. I'm especially when it's hot. Like, we're going out there and playing this time of year. Let's not look at a putt from three angles, people. I mean, first of all, you're not making it for money. You're not – most of the courses I'm playing, it's not a big money game, Justin. It's it's a normal – just I'm playing municipal golf for the most part. So let's not drag it on. Just get to your shot, be ready, and play. And it's not too much to ask. You don't have to play as fast as I do, but just, you know, don't be slow.
I love that.
Before I deleted Twitter, sorry, did you tweet out that you played a 90-minute? Was that you, John? That was it 90 record. Minutes or 60 minutes?
That's a new course record for me.
Wow.
90-minute, 18-hole, okay. Full course. Like, I had a golf cart, so I wouldn't have made it that fast without the cart. But, yeah, man, and that's the thing. Like, I was playing in a foursome at a 6 o'clock start time in the morning. And they weren't necessarily slow, but they just weren't quick. And I'm thinking to myself, guys, if I go ahead, I can finish this in two hours. So
just let me get in front of you.
And that's what I did. And they never saw me. And I finished in 90 minutes. It was so perfect. Like, I didn't play perfect. I played decent, but it was, there's no messing around. I'm out there. I want to play before it gets really hot. And that's why I booked the tee time as early as I do.
Another thing that drives me crazy is when people are playing up on me because of people that are slow ahead of me. It's like, now you're rushing me. You know, again, I'm not a great golfer, you know, and we've yet to have the pleasure of playing on the course together, but my back is feeling well enough now to where I can golf. I shoot in the 90s. Okay. So it's like, I know what I'm doing. I double bogey a lot, you know, and that's kind of where I'm at. But people behind me, I get antsy. It's the same thing driving. If people are riding me, it drives me nuts. I don't know what it is. It's just this urgency thing that I have to work out with my therapist or something. Wait, you know?
Is this my turn?
I think, yeah. Matthew, you're up.
Do I read this one out?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Read this one. This is a good one.
Should John and Matthew be the radio voices for the Valley Suns?
Ooh.
I just want to know.
Let's build a brand.
Is that a goal?
I don't know. Why not? There's only, what, like 17 home games, right?
Was 25. I don't know how many what they're at. I know it was when I was calling the Northern Arizona Suns games, we had 25, I think, home games. It was 50 game season.
Amazing.
Yeah, look, send me the demo reel. You know, let's have a listen to what the play by play sounds like, you know, and we'll go from there. Not that they're leaving this in my hands, by the way. I'm not the decision maker in this process.
So this has actually turned into a job interview. Crap.
Yeah.
I better not play the big dick Booker drop on here.
Matthew, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
All right. A couple more questions. We know you got to get out of here. So let's fire away at these. What is your favorite city to visit in the NBA? Obviously, you've been to every single city, following the Suns around, calling all the games. What's your favorite city to go to?
I'm going to give you two.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two because one's a biased answer in my hometown, the Bay Area. I've got my friends and family, my parents, my sister, and her family, and you know, close buddies. And then just San Francisco is my favorite city. So yeah. I know and that, you know, yeah, stop it with that. Have you been to the Oracle Park? I mean, it's just there's nothing close to it in sports. Anyway, I do think that my favorite city to visit that's not the one that I grew up in is New Orleans, Louisiana.
Ooh.
I absolutely adore the Big Easy. I do. I've had so many good times there. I love the music. I love the food. I love the people. I love getting to learn different history and funkiness about the place. And obviously, you know, it can get a little humid and swampy, so it's not my favorite weather-wise. But, I absolutely love New Orleans. And growing up, like, New Orleans was the place that my parents went, and it was like the adult playground. They would never take the kids. And I never knew why. I was like, why can't we? What? Why are we not going? And now I fully know, and we have not taken our kids. And my wife tries to get there when the Suns are there to meet me and enjoy it, and she loves it too. So we've had so much fun there, and just so much good music, and we've made so many good friends too. So all of those factors, I think, are why I love New Orleans, Louisiana.
The South's Las Vegas. More beads. All right, last question before we get out of here.
This is a good one. Which one's gonna be?
What's it gonna be? I think it's gonna be this one.
Is seat 19D the best one on the plane?
Ooh, good pull there. 19D back corner of the plane, the absolute last seat, far back left corner. What I love is I do get to see all the action. Like, I mean, anything that's going on the plane is in front of me. So there's that. And then people come back and they holler at us as they're heading to the latrine. So it's a nice place to be. We got some conversation. I do enjoy taking some pictures out of the window and sharing them with the tweeps out there too. So that became a nice little tradition. Shout out to Tim Kempton for the hashtag suggestion, because he was the one who suggested do the hashtag seat19D. And I'm going to keep doing that as long as they keep putting me in 19D.
So what's the craziest thing that you've seen on the plane ahead of you?
Ooh, I've seen some people get a little nervous. We've hit some real patches. I mean, I don't love that part of flying, right? I know we're all kind of, experienced with regards to the bumpy flights. But, yeah, sometimes you see some reactions, you know, some people flailing, some different things. And, people do their different kind of calming mechanism. Oh. Yeah, we've all got our different ways of calming. Nobody touches Eddie Johnson when it comes to entertainment on the plane.
Oh, I believe
and
it.
So anytime he is just entering, like when he comes on the plane, which, yes, is always after me, it is very entertaining to watch what he's got in store. And there's always some trash that he's going to talk or some, you know, business that he's going to give to somebody, including me. And we all love EJ for that. I think just the interactions, getting to see which coaches are kind of huddling up with whom in front, and noticing kind of who's really breaking down video and who's in charge of what is a nice thing for me to pay attention to. It just gives me a better idea of what people are responsible for, you know, with their respective jobs.
And do you have military in your family? Because you called it a latrine.
There is military in my family, but I don't know. I thought it was a better word, you know, to use in the circumstance.
We would call it a shitter, and that's probably why we're not the voice of the Valley Suns as of yet. Okay, we'll get there. Okay, I got to work on my vocabulary. But, time goes by when you're having fun talking. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Bloomer. We really do. We got to have you back on during the summer. It's always hard because, obviously, we go live right after every Suns game. You're starving. So we can't get you on because you got to get that popcorn, that unhealthy food in.
I will talk to you with a mouthful of popcorn at some point. Like, well, I'll just pop on with some popcorn and we'll just do a little post-game corn conversation.
All you got to do is come up to those seats where we sit, because we record right there now. Like me and Matthew, we stay late. I see you walk out every time while we're recording the podcast. So if you ever just want to pop up there with some popcorn, come on.
You know
down.
What's going to lure me. You just bring the halftime hot dogs and the popcorns and stuff, and you just have it all waiting for me. I'll go up there and eat my dinner.
Yeah.
We will have some wieners waiting for you up there. So, but again, Bloom, truly appreciate you coming on the show. We're actually going to close out the show by playing. You have a lot of great calls. And references, and I know that earlier in the season, or at the end of the season, you put together kind of a mixtape of all your different calls. So we'll play that on out for all the Jamsters to hear. Again, reminder, subscribe, rate, and review. Listen to John Bloom. If you are not listening to him while you're trying to find the best Suns content and hear the game the way it should, the way that you paint the picture, it's impossible to do what you do. It really is, because it's not only do you have to paint the picture, but you have to articulate it so well and so quickly. It's not easy, and I'm a talker, and I even have a hard time with that. So mad respect to you, Bloom. Thank you for coming on the show. Unbelievably honored to have you here. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Let me pull up this file here.
Holding inside the timeline. It's down to 8 as he puts it on the deck. Bounces to Goodwin and gets it back with 5 seconds left. Booker driving right wing. He's going to fade from 3 and knock it down.
Oh, my.
If he can make it there, he can make it anywhere. Devin Booker from distance with 1.7 seconds to go and a timeout for the Knicks. 116-113. Suns take the 3-point lead.
Here comes Booker in transition, ahead to Durant up the left wing, drives into the paint, puts it up and in right over Royce O'Neal, and the Suns are up 13 as KD has 23, equaling Nurkic's game high. And my job ain't a job, it's damn good times, city to city. I'm running my rhymes. Kevin Durant getting it done here on his return to Brooklyn. We'll take a timeout. 3:36 to play in the third quarter. Suns up 13.
Into the forecourt, the left-hand dribble keeps coming, goes to the rim, left-hand scoop shot off the window, and in. Young Booker, go farther, go further, go harder. 87-65. Booker and the Suns lead it by 22 with 7:20 left to go in the third. Young Carter, go farther, go further, go harder. Is that not why we came? And if not, then why bother?
Outlet pass to a streaking Saban Lee. He'll go to the rim. Boom. And jam it down. Saban Lee, a big-time jump. Looks like he's 5'9", but he ain't that small. Feels like he's 7 feet tall. Back out to KD. He takes a dribble, then feeds Booker right wing for three. He got it. Devin Booker, you'll come back each time you leave. Because, darling, he's a nightmare dressed like a daydream out there. 89-68. Suns up 21. Come back each time you leave. Because, darling, I'm a nightmare dressed like a daydream. So it's going to be in the block, then we add it again. Durant dribbles with three to shoot. Crosses over on Gordon. 20-foot jumper up and in. He rattled it home. Kevin Durant in this hoop world. He's Freddie, Jason sitting in. The place is a great but never complacent. Kevin Durant's got 32 on the night to lead all scorers, and the Suns are up 10. In this hoop world, I'm Freddie, Jason. I'm sitting in the place is a great but never complacent. Suns fans starting to applaud the effort here tonight. Back-to-back wins at home. Booker, right wing three. What in the world's in that bag? What you got in that bag, D-Book? Another three. That ties his career high again. His sixth make. Reaper rolls off, no good. Booker there for the offensive rebound. Feeds Allen for three. No. Booker tracks down another offensive rebound to Durant for three. He missed it off the back iron. Nurkic bats it out to Booker. He'll pull up himself and hit it off the window. Booker first trying to hit his teammates for open threes. That didn't go so well. So why not just jump it up off the glass? 17 on the night for Book to lead the Suns, and they're back within three. Timeout Cavs with 10:16 left to go in the third. It's 72-69. Cleveland on top. We'll be right back.